Hello, my name is Ben Burrell and welcome back to Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that takes an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. I know I'm always mentioning this at the start of each and every episode, but it's really helpful for us if you can follow us on Instagram or Twitter. You can find us at Bob Dylan Podcast, and we have a website as well at the moment. There's a blog post there about an alternative version of Episode 5's album, Infidels. Have a look at that, bobdylanpodcast.com. So on with Episode 6, Part 2. This is the second look at an album that at the time of release did the unthinkable, and that is adding to an already iconic back catalogue. Has since become Dylan's masterpiece. This is Blood on the Tracks.
'Twas in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
As I mentioned in part one of this episode, this album came at a time when Dylan was back on track. No pun intended. The previous record and tour were decent enough to be called a return to form by some areas of the music press. He'd also re-signed with his former label and musical powerhouse Columbia, and was exploring some new relationships in his personal life too, which forms part of the inspiration for these songs. After writing mostly on his Minnesota farm by sketching down ideas and lines in a red notebook, he managed to finish around 17 songs. But when it came to the record, we only get 10, which sounds like an overly economic production, but it would appear there's lots of different takes of the same song. An idea called Bell Tower Blues was just another version of Call Letter Blues, which would be released on the first bootleg series. That song in itself was a different incarnation of track 6, which makes the final record, Meet Me in the Morning. That's repeated elsewhere with a song like Up to Me, which is basically the backing track of Shelter from the Storm, just with different lyrics.
Everything went from bad to worse. Money never changed a thing. Death kept following, tracking us down. At least I heard your bluebird sing. Now somebody's got to show their hand. Time is an enemy. I know you're long gone. I guess it must be up to me.
Ellen Bernstein, a Columbia Records employee who'd struck up an intimate relationship with Dylan during this time, mentions in interviews just how excited Bob was to play this new material to anyone whose opinion he valued. He played bits to the bluegrass composer Peter Rowan, as well as Mike Bloomfield, who'd famously played on Highway 61. Not forgetting one of Bob's favourite country singers introduced by Bernstein, Shel Silverman, and dueling banjos composer Eric Weisberg. He was clearly excited about the new material, and we get the impression he was using this process to almost pre-produce the album. Bernstein is quoted as saying, "I think as he wrote the songs and he played them for people, the sequencing decided itself. He was really definite when it came to record. He knew exactly what he was going to do and how he was going to do it." Initially, Dylan considered recording Blood on the Tracks with an electric backing group, which was another reason for the contact with Mike Bloomfield. Bloomfield, he knew from previous records, could accomplish the right electric sound. But during an early meeting, he became confused by Dylan's strange guitar tuning and exhausting pace. He says, "They all began to sound the same to me. They were all in the same key, and they were all very long. It was one of the strangest experiences of my life." The idea, of course, was quickly abandoned. Instead, Dylan employed another early listener, Eric Weisberg, and his band Deliverance to back the songs. Recording with them began at A&R Studios in New York City on September the 16th, 1974, the very studio where Dylan had recorded so many classics the decade before. This studio had produced Blonde on Blonde and Highway 61, amongst many others, and few in the room could have predicted that lightning was about to strike again, especially when Weisberg's band was fired 2 days in because, once again, they couldn't keep up with Dylan. It sounds like Bob didn't really take to them. And more importantly, he wouldn't run through his strange guitar tuning on the songs. Weisberg is quoted as saying, "He put us at a real disadvantage. If it hadn't been that we liked the songs and it was Bob, it would have been a drag. His talent overcomes a lot of stuff." It's amazing this classic album got off to such a bad start. There's a feeling, though, he was on a roll. He was in the zone, for want of a better phrase. They were creating something special amongst a manic pace, and Dylan had no time to slow down. Eventually, he only retained Tony Brown from the band and would add organist Paul Griffin, who'd worked on Highway 61, as well as steel guitarist Buddy Cage. After 10 days and 4 sessions, the album was done. This is breathtaking pace. Dylan clearly wanted to capture this energy that was buzzing around these songs, and it does feel like these tunes are perfectly distilled. Sometimes great songs are overworked or over-recorded and they lose that original buzz, something we find more and more in today's prolonged recording sessions. Here, though, just listen to the mood that's captured on this session's recording of track 4, Idiot Wind.
I noticed at the ceremony that you left your bags behind. The driver came in after you left. He gave them all to me and then he resigned. The priest wore black on the seventh day and waltzed around while the building burned. You didn't trust me for a minute, babe. I've never known the spring to turn so quickly into autumn.
You can almost hear how fresh and intimate this recording is. This version of this track was cut on September the 19th in New York, the same day as other album tracks Simple Twist of Fate and Buckets of Rain. But unlike those two takes, this version of Idiot Wind wouldn't make the final album cut. Dylan had finished and delivered the record to Columbia, and they'd even done test pressings of the album. In fact, tens of thousands of LP sleeves were already printed, but this was to be halted very, very quickly. Bob had played the record to his brother David, who, after first listen, urged Dylan to re-record with a more full-band, electric sound, fearing this record in its current form would flop. Clearly, Dylan, having had a mini comeback of sorts with Planet Waves No. 1, had a taste for renewed success and agreed to change things around. Both brothers were due to spend Christmas together in Minnesota, and David suggested getting a band of locally based musicians to re-record some of the material. On December the 27th and again on the 30th, some of the best session players in Minneapolis gathered to recut 5 songs. His process was to teach the tunes to a local guitar shop owner, Chris Weber, who then taught the other musicians. There was little rehearsal or prep time, so much so, in fact, that on track 7, Lily Rosemary and the Jack of Hearts, apparently Dylan realises in the opening bars he's playing his harmonica in the wrong key, causing him to readjust during the cut that stays on the final album.
The festival was over and the boys were all planning for a ball.
4 out of the 5 tracks they cut, including Tangled Up in Blue and Idiot Wind, are basically live recordings, mixed live with almost no overdubs. Something you can hear in the howl and slightly ramshackle mixing of the album's opener.
I lived with him on Montague Street, the basement down the stairs. There was music in the cafes at night and revolution in the air. Then he started in dealing with slaves and something inside of them died. She had to sell everything she owned and froze up inside.
This Minneapolis band wouldn't receive official credit on the album sleeve, even the ones that came with later reissues. Nor would they get gold or even platinum discs, a thank you call, or even a copy of the restructured album. One of the players, Greg Inhofer, is quoted as saying, "I wonder what would have happened if we got credit. Any time I hear a Dylan song, whether I played on it or not, it sticks in my craw and I go, man, what if, why was I so naive? I mean, I was taken advantage of, totally." By all accounts, this re-record was swift and abrupt. It does add a charm to these songs. That live sound gives them an impulsive feel that brings another dimension to the recordings. But from a personal point of view, I still love the New York session's bleak, mournful hymn, and a complete album of that would possibly even eclipse the official released masterpiece of the final record. Take track 3, You're a Big Girl Now, for example. This is one of my favourite Dylan songs, but the New York Sessions cut raises this high bar even higher.
Our conversation was short and sweet. It nearly swept me off of my feet. And I'm back in the rain. And you are on dry land. You made it there somehow. You're a big girl now.
Listen to the warm-sounding pedal steel guitar from Buddy Cage and then the chirping of that fast-rotating organ on the next verse, all housing Dylan's lyrics perfectly.
To quote a phrase, you've known it all the time. I'm learning it these days. Oh, I know where I can find you.
big girl all the way. Time is a jet plane, it moves too fast. Oh, but what a shame that all we've shared can't last.
With hindsight, it's easy to say he could have included this song or that song, this version or that version, but with the merger that we get of the two sessions on the final album, it's probably the best of both worlds. There's a nice bit of variety and some cohesion as well. There's also a feeling that an all-acoustic record at the time would have betrayed Bob's decision to go electric in the first place. One of the songs that does shine from the Minneapolis sessions, in my opinion, is track 4, Idiot Wind. In New York, we heard a bitter, forlorn song sung from the bottom of a bottle. Here, though, it's fired up and ready to strike, something that is set up in the song's opening line, "Someone's Got It In For Me."
Someone's got it in for me. They're planting stories in the press.
In that loose timeline I mentioned in episode 1, where this album feels like it's moving through the breakdown of a relationship from the initial love and separation on the opener to the sadness of the breaking of ties on the next two songs to then the final track's feeling of acceptance, here, though, we're right in the middle of a bitter feud, directly after the relationship is finished, and no one gets away. Even people outside the relationship, with those lines about being accused of killing a man and taking his wife, aren't spared. Dylan is screaming at the mess surrounding him with lines like, "Idiot wind, blowing every time you move your teeth." Just listen to Bob's snarl on the second verse as he spits in disbelief at a loved one's betrayal.
Images and distorted facts.
There's not just a feeling of betrayal from a loved one, but almost everyone with no empathy present, especially on that great lyric of "the priest wore black on the seventh day and sat stone-faced while the building burned." And elsewhere, bringing it back to the disorientation of the end of a long-term relationship with that line of "you tamed the lion in my cage, but it just wasn't enough to change my heart. Now everything's a little upside down. As a matter of fact, the wheels have stopped. What's good is bad, what's bad is good." This, like all of Dylan's classics, is a whirlwind of deafening sound and verse. There's obvious comparisons to Like a Rolling Stone, and at times this does feel like a continuation of that song's themes, except here it's a little more jaded and a little more bitter. On the classic 60s cut, there was always a hint of redemption. Here, though, Dylan makes his way through the verses, singing them like he's reading a jail sentence to someone in the dock, especially in the fourth verse as he delivers the death sentence.
You hurt the words that I love best and cover up the truth with lies. One day you'll be in the ditch, flies buzzing around your eyes, blood on your saddle.
Just like we discussed on Tangled Up in Blue, this track feels like less of a firm narrative and more like a feeling of betrayal that's been captured in a song. That line from before where Bob sings, "Even you, yesterday, you had to ask me where it was at," is key. I feel the whole song is based around that idea, something that's continued onto the final verse as Bob sings, "I've been double-crossed now for the very last time, and now I'm finally free. I kiss goodbye to the howling beast on the borderline which separated you from me."
I've been double-crossed now. Separated you from me.
In the very final lines, our narrator even chastises himself for trusting the subject of the song. Dylan vents, "We're idiots, babe. It's a wonder we can even feed ourselves," giving us the idea that at the end he's saying, "I'm just as bad as you for being with you and for trusting you in the first place." Those final lines about being free and kissing goodbye feed into the idea that this song is defiantly putting that relationship to bed once and for all. Interestingly, that's something that would be completely reversed in the album's next song, "You're Gonna Make Me Lonesome When You Go," where we hear a brief reconciliation on the album timeline. What is actually a really nice touch is that's often the case in relationships of this kind in real life. This is the on-again, off-again point reflected perfectly in these two tracks. It sounds like Bob spent a lot of time working on Idiot Wind. No surprise, given its epic yet intricate nature, Bernstein remembers his process, saying, "That one in particular, that I remember changing a lot. Whole verses would come and go. It was a real organic process for him. One of those verses to go was an ill-judged sexual prowess pun, with Dylan quipping, "After I waited forever for you, you said that I came too fast." In hindsight, it's probably for the best that was left out. Musically, Idiot Wind is a force to be reckoned with. The Minneapolis session cut that makes the album enables the lyrics to take on a manic quality that suits those rage-filled verses. That manic quality is given a nice foothold on the guitar chords. They're played high up on the fretboard and dance around the top end. Bob moves up and down quickly, going from a chord of A minor at the 5th fret up to the 7th and 8th frets, with the next chords being B sus 4 and a high B, before the sound comes back down with an E. This jerky, quick high movement enables those bitter lyrics perfectly, as we go from A minor to B sus 4 to B and then back to E.
They say I shot a man named Gray and took his wife to Italy. She inherited $1 million and when she died it came to me. I can't help it if I'm lucky. People see me all the time and they just can't remember how to end.
On top of this, the drum fills rattle like shutters in a hurricane and the organ lurches to deafening levels as Dylan gives possibly his most energetic performance since he cried Napoleon in rags.
I noticed that this ceremony, your corrupt ways had finally made you blind. I can't remember your face anymore. Your mouth has changed, your eyes don't look in the mind.
I also love those vicious hi-hat hits, adding venom to the vocals. I know I said I have a lot of affection for the New York Sessions sound, but here the decision to re-record in December feels warranted. This song takes on a whole other guise with harsher, more fuller instrumentation. It's going from a bitter comment during the New York Sessions to an all-out assault in its Minneapolis final form. This is a big departure from the preceding song on the album, track 3, You're a Big Girl Now. Another Minneapolis re-record where our narrator mourns the death of a relationship.
It's a price I have to pay. You're a big girl all the way.
In that loose album narrative from before, this song works perfectly, bridging the gap from the breakup and attempted reconciliation of Tangled Up in Blue and Simple Twist of Fate's initial painful parting to Idiot Wind's embittered diatribe looking back over the relationship. This track feels like it's 4 minutes and 32 seconds of letting go. You're a Big Girl evokes a sense of don't come crying back to me when you want this to work again, but also at the same time, you can make it on your own now and you don't need me. There's shades of Idiot Wind's scowl, but at the same time we still have the vulnerability from Simple Twist of Fate. There's still some offer of reconciliation too in those lines of I can change, I swear, and later, but what's the sense of changing horses in midstream? But for the most part, unlike the first two songs, the person the song is about is not present and our narrator is singing alone. In the opening line, we hear how a brief meeting has confirmed the end of a relationship, emphasising their separation. Bob sings, our conversation was short and sweet. It nearly swept me off my feet. And I'm back in the rain, and you're on dry land. You made it there somehow. You're a big girl now.
Our conversation was short and sweet. It nearly swept me off of my feet. And I'm back in the rain.
There's also a strong feeling that the woman our narrator is concerned with has outgrown him and moved on to bigger and better things, which acts as a nice lead-in to Idiot Wind. Also, interestingly, it can be viewed that this song acts as a part two of Blonde on Blonde's Just Like a Woman. Imagine both songs are about the same person. 8 years earlier, Dylan told us that famous line of, she breaks like a little girl. Here, though, time has moved on and she's grown. She doesn't break anymore, and our narrator knows it. This idea gains a little more traction when we look at Just Like a Woman's lyric of "Tonight as I stand inside the rain" and compare that with that line here about being back in the rain. This does feel a little tenuous, but might not be a million miles away from the truth, as if the songs are about Dylan's wife Sarah, the dates and shifting feelings in the songs do match up somewhat. The same could be applied to a host of other possible subjects, but it's an interesting idea to ponder.
Nobody feels any pain. Tonight as I stand inside the rain, everybody knows that baby's got new clothes, but lately I see her ribbons and her bows have fallen from her curls. She takes just like a woman. Yes, she does. She makes love just like a woman. Yes, she does. And she aches just like a woman. But she breaks just like a little girl.
The lyrics in Simple Twist of Fate are amongst the best on the album. That line of "love is so simple," to quote a phrase, refers to a song from the group The Dells called "Love is So Simple," which is not only a nice muso reference, but it also gives the impression this couple the song is about used to listen to this track like it was their song, and our narrator is putting that in as a little reference between lovers and the time they spent together. Just like with Idiot Wind, musically we have a more fuller sound courtesy of the Minneapolis Misfits band, and once again some very complex drumming. Kevin Odegaard, a guitarist from the Minneapolis Sessions, remembers Bill Berg, the drummer, inspiring Dylan whilst recording, and his percussion is front and centre here once again. There's some more brilliant abrupt hi-hat work, but we also have some beats on the drum's rim, which in another context would be quite upbeat and jazzy, but here gives a very flat, almost knocking on the door sound, which on paper, and me just saying it then, shouldn't really work, but in the song provides some diversification compared to the rest of the album's percussion.
Time is a jet plane, it moves too fast. Oh, but what a shame that all we've shared can't last. I can change, I swear. Oh, see what you can do.
The guitars are really intricate here too. Listen to that intro again. We have three guitars picking the chords, one on the left which is higher up, one on the right that ventures round lower bass notes, and the middle one which goes higher up even further. They also interchange frequently, occasionally playing chords, and there's lots of hammering on and pulling off of notes too, which is where the guitarist plays a note and then moves the sound with another finger, creating a quick change. It's not the cleanest guitar playing in the world, but I love how they all work together, especially when they sit on top of those simple piano chords. Kevin Odegaard, the guitarist from the Minneapolis Sessions, tells a story about the recording of this song. Bob asked another player to fingerpick along to the tune on a mandolin very high up on the fretboard. The musician said it would be too painful on his fingers, so Bob asked to borrow his instrument and did the take himself without tuning up beforehand. This makes the album's final cut, despite the fact Bob is playing an instrument out of tune, not for the first time on this record. This is bizarre, thinking this is an iconic recording artist at work, but there's so many basic level errors on this record. It's a little bit rough around the edges, but it still manages to become a classic. Despite the recording sessions in Minneapolis finishing on the 30th of December, the album was released under a month later, on the 20th of January, light speed pace compared to today's industry. The listeners of it not only got a classic record with some of its legendary artists' best songs, but they also get a glimpse into his personal pain, given the subject matter of these tracks. Although, that might not actually be true. Something we look at in part three, next time.
With a pain that stops and starts, like a corkscrew to my heart. Ever since we've been apart.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Hope you enjoyed. As I said last time, if you have the time and you haven't done this in a while, I urge you to go and sit and listen to this album from start to finish. It will make you fall in love with it all over again. It's a timeless record. In the meantime, if you could give us a rating, if you're listening in a place that enables you to do that, we are very partial to 5 stars and 4 stars. And again, if you can, feel free to click subscribe or follow the podcast. That really, really helps us out. Thanks once again for listening, and we'll see you next time for part 3.